Chapter 7. Michael. Michael's wings glittered in the bright, midday sun as he passed over the promenade and towards the meeting hall. Now that the heir to Lucifer had been put in place, the time had come to discuss the consequences of Adam's actions. The death of the Morning Star, the devil himself, was no small thing. It needed to be addressed post-haste. The Archangel of War had always thought that it would be him who brought down his brother, or, if not him, another Archangel. Every day of every month of every year since the day he'd cast Lucifer out, he'd seen the confrontation in his head. Lucifer, in his full battle regalia, his pitchfork clashing against Michael's sacred sword of the spirit, the clatter of angelic steel on angelic steel, the red skies of Armageddon all around them, and the death cry of his wayward brother as his blade found that perfect strike through his guard. It was prophesied, after all, that he would do battle with the seed of evil, that they would come together in a clash for the fate of all creation. He'd trained every day for that fated meeting, knowing that all which was good and holy would rest solely upon his shoulders. Now, it would never come to pass. Now, he was dead. From what Michael had heard, it was Lucifer's own arrogance that had killed him. He came, unarmed, to face Adam, banking on his own power to win the day. He hadn't even considered the possibility of being taken off guard. Hadn't considered that he could be surprised. Oh no, not him. Never Lucifer. Even in Eden, before it all came crashing down, he'd been so sure of himself, always. Michael would have expected that being cast out might have taught him something about his arrogance. But of course it hadn't. The Prince of Pride, killed by confidence. Really, it was almost too poetic. Michael would have laughed, if he wasn't so furious that it hadn't been him who dealt the killing blow. But his mind kept returning to the prophecy. The seed of evil will be slain upon the day of Armageddon, by the chosen of divinity. With the Morning Star dead, it had been severed. That had never happened before. The prophecies of the divine mandate always came true. Unless it had been symbolic? Had it meant something else? What was the seed of evil, if not Lucifer? How could it be anyone but him? Was it referring to one of the princes? A Goetian, perhaps? A sinner's spirit? These were the thoughts that went through his head as, finally, he reached the small, Greco-Roman-style building nestled deep in the heart of the promenade. The two lesser archangels who stood sentry outside nodded as Michael entered. He was a little late, as he usually was. Michael preferred for the meetings to be over and done with as quickly as possible. The tedium of standing stock still and talking through your problems was tiresome enough. Waiting for everyone to arrive and get situated and ready was simply not something the Archangel of War had the patience to put up with. Marching into the room, he walked to his spot at the meeting table. Around it were assembled his five counterparts. Gabriel, of course, sat on the other side of the table. He was clad in his signature tunic, his bright, light brown wings stretched absently, his green-gold eyes following Michael as he took his place at the table, standing when others sat. On his right was Sarah, all propriety and grace. He found it disgusting. They both infuriated him over that fiasco with Lucifer's filthy little daughter. Disavowing the exterminations, putting Lucifer's daughter on the throne, and planning to work with her? Work? With demons? The very idea was absurd. If Michael had his way, there would be blood and carnage, death and annihilation on a scale not seen in hell since Lucifer first conquered it. Every circle would have been leveled. Adam simply torched Pentagram City and called it a day. A massive blow to the Ring of Pride, to be sure, but a drop in the bucket of what needed doing.
Now that we are all here, shall we begin?
The soft-voiced Uriel said from his left. Uriel wasn't as tall as her brothers and sisters, but she was possibly smartest among them, the Archangel of Wisdom and Intelligence. She was kindly, with a lithe frame and beautiful, flowing red hair which came down to the small of her back. Her skin was the lightest of tan, her eyes a deep brown, the centerpiece of her youthful, beautiful face. Her wings, brilliantly shining and glossy, were a deep, cobalt blue, white little diamond-shaped markings on the tips of her feathers. She wore a modest, gray dress, long and flowing with deep blue lace accents. Her halo was silver and had 4 points set evenly, protruding from the ring's edge. On a belt she wore over her chest, there was the Book of Creation, containing the secrets that the divine powers themselves had trusted her with at the dawn of time. Michael knew her place, and respected her, but that didn't mean he liked her. Uriel was all knowledge and thought, always thinking, always advising, but rarely, if ever, taking action. This seemingly apathetic attitude was almost as confounding to Michael as Lucifer's original plan to, of somehow usurping the will of heaven itself. How could one know as much as she did and still spend their time studying more? Across from her sat Raphael, the soother, the nurturer, the lover. Archangel of healing and miracles, Raphael was a beautiful and kindly figure. His hair was black, and his eyes were a soft, beautiful pink. He had high cheekbones and smooth, tan skin, only a couple shades lighter than Sarah's, and his wings were white, the feathers adorned with beautiful, swirling patterns of crimson. He wore a beautiful tunic, light red accents on a base of pure, shining white, littered with hearts. On his hip was a narrow, one-handed sword similar to a rapier, and he looked for all the world like a romantic, swashbuckling storybook hero. His halo was a bright crimson, and floating above it in the center, a caduceus, representing the healing nature of his duties in the heavens. Michael found his overly emotional brother to be a little tiresome. He was always fawning over humans in love, going on about how beautiful it was and how noble the devotion they showed one another could be. The War Master loved humanity too, in his own way, but he didn't dwell on it. He simply did what he could to preserve the good in them, as was his purpose. Finally, there was Azrael. His dark, ominous hood and flowing, ancient cloak seemed to exude its own shadowy presence. His gray, withered-looking wings were folded neatly behind him. His halo was deeply purple, the skull that floated above it seeming to stare out at everyone and no one. Due to the nature of his being, the Angel of Death was already hard to understand, harder still to speak to. But his apathy irritated Michael. It was as if those foul, sinful souls on Earth never fazed him, the ones responsible for the very death he watched over. The Archangel of War simply didn't understand not wanting them all to be purged. The Reaper sat quietly, thin, spindly hands folded in front of him, head bowed. "Now then," Gabriel began, "I will go over the events of the previous day as they are known to have occurred. At noon yesterday, the first man undertook the, at the time, bi-yearly extermination. Adam took special care to attack and kill those who were involved with the plan of the Princess's Has-Been Hotel project. Charlie Morningstar got involved in fighting the Exorcist host, and so engaged the first man in single combat. After being defeated, Charlie Morningstar was reinforced by her father. Lucifer, however, came to the battlefield ill-prepared and unarmed. He was caught off guard, cornered, and killed." Michael's eyes drifted across the table to take in the reactions of his siblings at this news. They'd surely heard the whispers yesterday, but to hear some angels talking about it as gossip and to actually hear it confirmed were two different things. Sarah and Gabriel, obviously, already knew all the details and said nothing. Uriel looked conflicted. Her eyes were filled with worry, and she seemed to be in deep thought, probably trying to weigh all the possible consequences of the death of Hell's true king. He had been a vile degenerate, who betrayed them all. But despite that, he had created a kind of stability in the underworld, through his own apathy. After taking it for himself when he'd been cast down, Lucifer had right away rested upon his laurels. Without his leadership, the other elite of demonic society simply busied themselves with petty politicking and never posed a genuine threat to heaven. However, with him gone, who knows what could happen? Azrael didn't appear to be fazed at all, but his steepled fingers seemed to tighten slightly, and he became even more withdrawn.
"What do you mean by bi-yearly? At the time, what has changed?"
the Reaper asked.
"We had decided that, because of the extent of the extermination performed by Adam and the sheer number of sinners killed, we will not sanction another extermination for 5 years,"
Gabriel clarified.
"I'm not sure that's wise,"
Uriel said uncertainly.
5 years is a long time. They could do a lot in that time, and without regular exterminations, their population will grow unchecked. What if it causes an..."
She chose her words carefully, knowing what she said was the last thing any of them wanted to consider.
"Acceleration of hostilities."
"Yes,"
Michael said, staring at the Seraph.
"What if, Sarah?"
"The purge conducted by Adam was more than sufficient. There is no need for further bloodshed for the time, and the new ruler must consolidate her power,"
Sarah stated coolly. Finally, Raphael just seemed confused and, after a moment, asked for clarification.
"And you are telling us that the rumors that the exorcists have been saying are true? Lucifer is dead? Really, truly dead? By Adam's hand?"
he asked.
"Yes,"
Michael answered for her.
"A wayward fool of a brother assumed himself invincible and did not even consider the dangers of facing Adam in combat. He could have won easily, but remember, he didn't take the threat seriously. He never has."
As the War Master thought back on ages past, he reflected on how that arrogance had always gotten Lucifer into trouble. First, he'd been fixated on the ridiculous idea that he could wield the powers of the highest divine orders as if he were a deity. Then, when faced with the recompense of his actions, he assumed he could just strong-arm his way through with the help of the others he corrupted. That worked later, when he dealt with the Hellborn. But against Heaven, he had overestimated his chances. If Michael had to guess, he'd say it was because of his assumption of supremacy. Lucifer had liked to think he'd been the best of all the angels in heaven, but his fall and failure to usurp the divine powers showed that he'd never been as truly strong, powerful, or fearsome as he would have hoped himself to be. However, in typical fashion, Lucifer had preferred to ignore the reality of his failings. He'd buried himself in his silly little fixation of making ducks and other such nonsense, telling himself it hadn't been his fault. Maybe after 6,000 years of narcissistic delusion, he'd actually forgotten how to take anything seriously. He could have beaten Adam easily. But his overconfidence got him killed. Gabriel continued.
"After the death of Lucifer, Adam laid waste to Pentagram City. By our most conservative estimate, hundreds of thousands of sinners and Hellborn were killed in the Purge, and countless millions killed each other in the disorder that followed."
Uriel blinked.
"Hellborn? They were protected under the Pact. Adam has no..."
"The Pact was made with the Morning Star. After his death, it holds no weight. After Adam cut down Lucifer, the deal was void,"
Michael clarified. Personally, the Archangel of War thought that Adam hadn't gone far enough, but he didn't want to get into that debate now. His desire for righteous slaughter was often unappreciated, as his fellow angels had this sickening fixation for mercy and kindness, even towards the most degenerate of creatures. Most of them never visited humans at their worst, at war, like he had. Righteousness needed to be defended with overwhelming force. Innocence needed to be protected at all costs. Those creatures fed on the desecration of such things. If it had been up to Michael, they'd all have their day of reckoning. Uriel looked like she wanted to argue, but thought better of it. Sarah broke the uneasy silence.
Charlie Morningstar now rules hell, and before she could finish, the door flew open, and an exorcist ran into the room.
Archangels! Archangels!
She was yelling, panic clear even through the dehumanizing face of her masked helmet.
What?
Michael roared. He hated these meetings enough already. Interruptions would only make the tedium drag on all the further.
Lilith!
The much smaller angel said, shrinking at the Archangel of War's ire.
She's left heaven! Adam said she's on the way to hell now! She means to take the throne!
Everyone exchanged worried glances before Sarah spoke. This cannot be allowed to pass. Lilith must not take power. Her hedonism and madness would drive her to untold heights of depravity if she had the power of the throne. Michael, you must go down there now. Do not let her interfere with Charlie Morningstar. If she influences her without our knowledge, or, divine forbid, if she were to take the throne itself, it could threaten everything.
She will not get far,
he promised, the shadow of a smile passing Michael's face as he stood.
I will ensure it.
Michael! Gabriel's voice rang out sharp and purposeful, and everyone was quiet for a moment, shocked. The Archangel of Compassion almost never shouted. Michael stopped and looked over his shoulder.
What?
He hissed. He knew what his soft, weak brother was about to say, and it still made him furious when he heard it.
Do not kill her. Do not kill Lilith.
Why?
He hissed, dangerously calm.
Because, he said with a sigh, Lilith could be of use. She has worked with us before and could possibly work with us again. She is an ancient figure in hell and respected by its elders. However, now we must keep her away from the throne. You will go and order her to make herself scarce. Make sure that she knows we are watching. Do not let Lilith influence Charlie Morningstar or the rest of hell. Her evil and depravity is a terrible thing, and if Charlie is alone with her, without Lucifer to dampen the woman's evils, who knows what the Mother of Sin could cause her to do?
But what possible use could we have for that wretched harpy?
Michael spat.
Her hedonism goes even further than that of Lucifer's. If you'd seen what she's driven humanity to do, the sins that she has fostered.
The sins, Uriel said, the War Master's words reminding her. We need to know what they're going to do. We cannot have them interfering with what has been set in place, or using this instability to cause trouble. Lilith's powers in manipulation and subterfuge are unmatched among the denizens of Hell. We can use that, as distasteful as it is to do so.
Everyone nodded their heads and muttered agreement, except Michael. It took all his willpower to not go on a tirade about how much easier it would be were he to simply slaughter everyone and kill everything that opposed them. But of course, they had stability to worry about. Heaven forbid anyone gets hurt. The apathy of his fellow angels was often infuriating.
It's decided, then, Sarah said, speaking for the group. You go down there, find her, and tell her that we need her to keep the princess tied up and out of the way. It doesn't matter how she does it, but it needs to be done. Hell is in an extremely delicate state right now, and it can't be destabilized any further.
The Archangel of War gritted his teeth, put on his helmet, and raised a hand with intent, willing a portal to hell open in front of him.
And if she won't listen?
Michael asked.
If Lilith does not follow our command, what would you have me do?
Sarah sighed. If she isn't of use, then she's a threat. You know what to do.
Michael hoped that she would refuse then. If he couldn't kill Lucifer, slaying that vile temptress would be the next best thing.
We're going to need to kill them all one day,
he said, though he didn't turn to face them.
Every last one. Mark my words.
Leaving his fellow archangels to contemplate this, Michael stomped through the portal and into the blasted wastes. He would do as was needed. No matter what, he always had to remind himself that he was a soldier. Every holy soldier who had ever lived was under his command, but in the status of Heaven's eldest and most revered souls, he was still just a soldier. Gabriel ensured compassion was always considered. Sarah held sway over the heaven-born angels and watched over them. Uriel ensured that wisdom and forethought were always applied and that every decision that Heaven made was sensible. Raphael kept the fires of love and passion alive. Azrael shepherded the dead. And Michael was the soldier. He was the shield that guarded the realms of Heaven, the sword that struck at the hearts of the foul and debased, the undisputed master of all things involving holy conflict and righteous violence. And still, just a soldier. Soldiers followed orders, and so the great and terrible juggernaut of Heaven took in a deep breath, staring out across the Tartarian hellscape. He was on a hill overlooking Pentagram City, looking out across the ruins. Even after a day had passed, there were still some fires, and he could hear distant automatic gunfire as the sinners and hellborn fought over the ruins of what had once been their home. Typical. Even in this great upheaval, even as all they had known had fallen, their quarrelsome nature did not ebb. Sniffing in the foul air, he smelled past the filth and blood and burning of the city, past it all, until finally he smelled a trace of that distinct and sickeningly sweet stench of debauchery and selfishness that surpassed all others. That vile, disgusting taint which had first rebelled against all that was good and right. Lilith. His glittering wings spread, and he took flight, following his nose. He climbed high, high above the city, far into the red skies until it looked like a simple model set beneath him. Further, he followed the smell, passing the ruined skyscrapers and slums of the Pentagram, and the brief stretch of blasted, hellish badlands, suppressing his urge to dive down into the midst of the war-torn streets, to kill and kill and kill until his sword arm ached and his throat was raw with war cries. The phrase, "Soldiers follow their orders," rang through his head, and so he flew on, until the source of the odor was right under his nose. He had not been to hell since the signing of the pact. His presence alone would have been tantamount to a declaration of war, or, at the very least, a brazen and offensive threat. So, by the will of all his peers, he was to stay in reserve, guarding the Golden Gates in perpetuity, until the prophesied Day of Reckoning was finally at hand. Because of this, he didn't know this large structure that he stared down upon, with its vaunted white halls and vine-choked statues and fountains. It looked like, for lack of a better term, a palace. Closing his wings, the archangel fell several hundred feet, opening them at the last instant to dampen his fall, as he crashed down into the courtyard. He was standing in a garden, somewhat overgrown. Vines were crawling up the sides of the trees, around and across stagnant fountains and paths, the grass all around growing high and thick with weeds. The reddish-brown leaves of hellborn trees were casting dark shadows over the little dirt pathways, the widest of these paths leading directly to the front door of a massive, white and red-trimmed mansion. It had high, Gothic-style windows and architecture, and above the two massive redwood doors there was a stained glass window depicting a beautiful, delicious, shining red apple with a bite taken out of one side on a white background. This must have been Lucifer's estate. The smell of the Sin Mother was coming from within. Gritting his teeth, Michael stomped through the garden, his heavy steps surely announcing his presence to Lilith as he went up the wide stairs that preceded the front door three at a time. Rearing his foot back and kicking with all his force, the door crunched inwards as if hit by a runaway train, folding in on itself. The falling upper half threatened to come down on the archangel's head, and so he caught it and slammed it to the ground, sending splinters flying.
"Lilith!"
he screamed.
"Come out! I know you're here!"
Michael now stood in the foyer, a door on his right, several doors on his left, and two hallways that stretched back further into the mansion. Directly in front of him was another large staircase, framed by the aforementioned hallways, and the steps leading up to a hallway and balcony, which stretched off into the other wings of the estate. The Morningstar matriarch appeared at the top of the hallway, looking down on him with a bemused, relaxed smile.
"Michael, is that you? How good of you to visit, though you could have knocked,"
she said, looking down at the broken door.
"I was just walking the halls, reminiscing on old times. I must have ruffled Adam's feathers more than I thought for them to send you to hell in order to accost me."
Her smile turned to a grimace as she took a ready stance.
"Or are you here to kill me?"
Positively seething, the Archangel of War stood, clenching his fists in anger.
"No, unfortunately, I am not here to kill you. By order of the Council of Elder Angels, you are to stay away from Charlie Morningstar."
She glared down at him, grimacing in outrage. "What?"
"You are not to influence nor interact with your daughter. You are not to drive her rule into madness and debauchery. Heaven forbids it."
"Forbids it? The angels have the gall to tell me I can't speak to my own daughter?"
Lilith responded, laughing mirthlessly as she came down the stairs to face Michael. Her height only brought her face level with the bottom of his broad chest, yet she still stared up into his eyes with fearless conviction. The Archangel of War stiffened as she ran a hand up his chest plate to touch his neck, lifting his helmet up and gazing into his eyes.
"Come on. The elders aren't here right now. I'm sure you and I could work out a more fair arrangement, yes?"
she cooed. She cupped his cheek in one hand, but a single, massive, gauntleted hand took her by the throat, and the other forced her arm down. He squeezed and squeezed as the Sin Mother's eyes widened and began to thrash in his grip. It took every drop of willpower Michael had to let her go and not choke the life out of her right there. The skin her hand had touched felt hot, and the sensation infuriated the War Master, almost beyond his ability to control. Right as her face began to turn blue, he dropped her, letting Lilith fall to the ground, coughing and gasping in air.
"If it were not for the orders of the Elder Council, I would choke the life from you, here and now, for such impudence,"
he hissed.
"If you ever touch me again, it will be the last mistake you make. Do you understand me, whore of Tartarus? The very last mistake."
Lilith stood and straightened herself with as much dignity as the situation allowed and glared at him.
"You truly are a joyless, boring brute," she lamented. "I'll bet you've never even felt the pleasure that can only be gained in that most intimate of ways," she said. "Surely you've wondered, yes? I mean, have you truly not ever considered the unmatched pleasure and sensation that can be only felt in the throes of sex? The feeling of soft skin against yours, the sensations running through your cock to send incredible waves of pleasure through your whole body, the unmatched bliss of spilling your seed into that tight, warm wetness that seems to pull you back with every thrust you make, the smell of the sweat, the taste of their lips. Michael, you truly mean to tell me that you've never even wanted to experience it? You can. I'm here, ready and willing. Come on, have me, right here. I promise I can make you see a whole new kind of heaven, and I won't tell anyone."
"No,"
he said, in a tone as final as death, drawing his sword. As it left its black and gold-trimmed sheath, the shining golden blade caught fire. Its blade was tall, almost taller than Lilith, and the golden flames that seemed to burn on it endlessly made the entire, massive room of the foyer feel hot. On the side of the blade, there was inscribed the phrase, Benedictus Dominus Petre Mea, qui docet manus meas ad perellium, et digitos meos ad bellum. The archangel pointed the blade squarely at the archtemptress's chest and glared down at her, setting his helm back in its place.
If you were not needed, I would kill you where you stand. But the angels of heaven have decided you have a different purpose. You are to go to the circles and prevent the princes of hell from influencing the heir to the Morning Star. It is not for Asmodeus to turn pride into another realm-wide brothel, or for Satan to erect 1,000 fighting pits and make wrath reborn. Your daughter will be as Lucifer was. Cooperative, submissive, and doing what is best for stability.
What is best for heaven, you mean?
Lilith retorted with a joyless smile. His siblings would have denied the verbal jab, but Michael only smirked under his helmet.
Yes. What is best for heaven?
What makes you think I'll take orders from you? I am Lilith. I have denied heaven from the start, and I will not.
Michael's sword moved so close to her chest that he could see her wince from the heat. Her composure crumbled for a moment as she stumbled back, fearing impulsion.
If you will not cooperate, you will die. Lucifer isn't here to protect you from the consequences of your actions, Lilith.
Michael spat.
Do not make the mistake of thinking heaven will be as limp-wristed with you as my pathetic, wayward brother was.
The sheer, impotent anger in Lilith's eyes nearly made the archangel laugh. While he couldn't kill her, denying her selfish desire for petty rule and shattering her delusions of grandeur was almost as satisfying. Almost. But she collected herself and gritted her teeth before sighing in resignation, turning away and willing a portal to open. Predictably, it smelled of sweaty bodies, sickeningly sweet perfumes, and other fouler things. The bluish-hued light of the Circle of Lust passed through the portal and into the room and made the Archangel of War almost sick to his stomach.
Very well, Michael. I will do as they ask, she said over her shoulder. But we'll meet again. And next time, maybe you'll be in the mood for some real fun. My offer is standing. I've always wondered about the muscles under that stifling armor of yours.
Get out of my sight,
he hissed, sword arm trembling as he fought the urge to cut her down here and now. She shrugged.
Oh, all right. Until next time, Mikey.
She winked, and with only a couple steps, she was gone. He was left there, in the front hall of the mansion where his wayward brother had lived, after betraying them. For some reason, Michael felt compelled to just walk. He walked up the stairs and into the hallway, looking at the walls. His sword's blazing blade was the only sound in the silent, abandoned mansion home of the Morning Stars. The floor was a dark, deep redwood, the walls off-white and trimmed with decorated red baseboard, and, hanging every few feet, there were family portraits. Michael stopped at one and stared into the picture. It was a painting depicting a bright, sunny day, at least as sunny and bright as hell was capable of getting. The red skies were almost pretty, framed against the towering shape of the Morning Star estate. Lucifer's family was in the garden he'd passed through when he'd arrived, though it was depicted here not as overgrown, but well-trimmed and cared for. Sitting under a tree, the Prince of Pride had Charlie in his lap and was reading a book to her, the both of them looking down into the pages, the young princess barely older than a toddler, staring with wide-eyed wonder at the tome her father read from. Michael stared into the painted shape of his brother's face, easy and relaxed, mid-speech, as he read to her. Lilith knelt behind them both, leaning over Lucifer's shoulder to share in the close family moment.
This was it. This was it. This was what he had betrayed his purpose for, the reason he'd tainted the world with sin and enticed mankind to abandon the rules of divine order, so that he would have this, a life, a peace, a family. It almost made his betrayal understandable, and for a moment, Michael empathized. This life, it was all most mortals wanted. Peace, family, joy. But to have it, Lucifer had led them astray. To claim this life for his own and enjoy himself in peace, countless billions had suffered. Every evil that had been done from one man unto another, every scheme, every deception, every sinful deed that had ever been done, he had insured them all for this. Lucifer, somehow among all of them, had considered himself above his duty and purpose. Michael reached out and placed a single, steel-clad finger against the painted visage of his long-lost brother. Then, with a roar of rage that had burned in him for countless millennia, he swung his sword once, twice, thrice, four times in 5 and 10 and 20 until finally the painting was an unrecognizable mess of burning parchment and splintered bits of frame.
But by all means, at least you were happy. Isn't that right, brother?
Michael said to no one. He couldn't stand being here a second longer, and with a mighty beat of his steel-plumed wings, he crashed through a window in the far wall. The wind was warm, the sun was blazing, yet, despite it all, the Archangel of War stewed in cold, detached fury.